This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
I don't think I have this one on the bumper list. Oh. We've corrected that.
Good.
Had to add a little Eagles here today. I was just asking Sue because I seem to be getting this. I think I've gotten two today. I had a couple yesterday. I just delete them, so I don't know exactly if it's coming from the same folks, but there's polling that goes on via text, and I've clicked on these before. I did it during the primary. One came over. It sort of piqued my interest. It was a Missouri poll. It wasn't a national poll, but it asked, this was back when we had the race for governor, et cetera, and I answered all those poll questions, but I seem to be getting a lot of those right now. Now, we've talked about polling. I tend to believe, to a certain extent, in the science of polling. I know that they get it wrong, but there is a science to it. And if you look at even the national election from Trump versus Clinton, people always point to 2016. Well, technically, she was up in the polls. She won by a couple million votes. So the polling wasn't quite as off as people think. Now, in 2022, I think the polling was significantly off. But I bring it up, Sue, because, look, I've deleted three or four of those in the last couple of days just because I don't really want to spend the time. But how many people are actually taking those versus doing what I'm doing, right?
I'm always afraid to take the polls because I'm just afraid that it's spam and somehow I will, get screwed because of it. But I get a lot of stuff from Ray Hartman. What is he? He's running against Ann Wagner, you say?
Yeah, he's running as the Democrat nominee against Ann Wagner. And, I don't think he's given much of a shot.
Well, I get a lot of stuff from him. I must be in that district. I don't know what the deal is.
Maybe we should mention, because in this era, I don't know how relevant Ray Hartman is or how relevant he's been for a long time, but obviously deep roots in St. Louis, connected with, did he start the RFT?
I don't know. That's
kind of his baby,
question.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, it was for a while. Did he start it? Did Ray Hartman start?
But he's been, he's been on Donnybrook, and I just don't see him as very relevant, but he's running against Ann for Congress, and he doesn't have a chance.
Yeah, right. He did found it in 77.
So, he's got strong St. Louis ties in history, but he's been irrelevant for, I would say, at least 15 years. We'll put him in that category. Same category as Charles Jaco, I think. Those two have a lot in common, even with their politics. Sean Flowers coming up. We're going to wait for Bill O'Reilly to get on the line here. Sean's coming up to, he's a regular on the Reardon Roundtable, but I thought about this today because there's all kinds of claims, by the way, not only from Kamala Harris, but from J.D. Vance and President Trump on home building and increasing the number of homes that are available. That seems like a really easy thing to say if you're a political candidate.
Yes.
Hey, we're going to build a million more homes, but it's a little bit more complicated. And outside of being the mayor of Eureka, Sean is the president of Flower and Fendler Homes. He's a home builder. He used to be the president of the St. Louis Home Builders Association. So we'll get some of the questions that I have for him.
Good.
For example, is let's say you decide, Sue, and you do some real estate work, but let's say you're going to build a home. Mm-hmm. What's the realistic timetable and where are the delays still happening, et cetera,
right?
Because there's complications, obviously, with certain products, et cetera.
Exactly. And the expense has skyrocketed to build stuff just for the materials. So
we had the I had the CBS News story. I might use this for audio cut of the day, but the guy in Nevada. I think he was in Vegas proper because they went and they talked to several people. They went to Reno and they went to other places too. But the guy said the $1.50 taco is, you know, $3 now. So it's not
exactly,
it's not a 10% increase. That is a 100% increase. But we'll keep talking about that. All right. Mr. Bill O'Reilly has jumped on the phone with us here this afternoon back on 97.1 FM Talk. He is the author, the iconic author of so many different books, including the new one called Confronting the President's No Spin Assessments. From Washington to Biden, he currently blogs and broadcasts at BillO'Reilly.com. Bill, welcome back. How are you?
You know, I'm the same, Mark, which is tragic for everybody. I don't seem to evolve. You know, I don't know why.
Oh, stop it. So your book is called Confronting the Presidents. We'll get to that. But what would you say if you had to confront Kamala Harris these days, Bill O'Reilly?
Well, I would ask her very specific questions. And thanks for having me back, Mark. I appreciate it. You know, for example, when she walks into the Philadelphia interview with the local reporter there, the reporter asks a very simple, straightforward question. How would you bring inflation down? And then the vice president does 2 minutes on her upbringing in Oakland. Well, as you know, and probably most people listening to us right now, that would never happen. If I'm the interviewer, I would say, I would stop and say, with all due respect, Madam Vice President, you're not answering the question. I'll pose it again. Do you have any specific things that you would do to bring inflation down? That's how you do the interview. You're polite, but you're firm. But today, we don't have the level of skill, particularly in television news, that hold people accountable.
I think that might be an understatement. Look, what I've said, I haven't criticized the questioning and the veracity of the questioning with Trump. What I've said is, hey, how about doing the same thing on the other side? And I don't know if you saw J.D. Vance with Dana Bash on Sunday morning kind of dress her down on this issue of Springfield, Ohio, just with the approach and the tone she takes with Kamala Harris versus Trump or J.D. Vance. I mean, it's not, they're not really trying to hide it, though, Bill. I guess we could say that, are they?
No. And Vance is right to make it an issue. Trump should have done that during the debate. He should have narrated the debate and told everybody watching, look, that was a big softball they just gave the vice president. Do I get one now? You just fact check me. Do you fact check her? He could have easily done that and narrated that debate real time, which would have just blown the whole thing up. So I don't know why the Trump-Vance team doesn't know what they're walking into. They should be better prepared for it because the corporate media is firmly on the side of the progressive movement in America, and that is Kamala Harris. So they know they're going to get jobbed. They're not going to be treated fairly.
You know, I sat here a week ago. We weren't sure what was going to happen, especially after that first debate. And it was just horrible for Trump. I thought it went awful. But having said that, then we're a week later, Bill. And where are we on the state of the race? Because it doesn't look like there's a lot of changes in the polling. This was interesting, too. There was a CBS This Morning piece. I don't know if you saw this. This Diaz is the name of the reporter. And they go to Nevada. They're trying to find some Harris voters. Here's what she says.
We had so much fun. But what was really incredible is in every single restaurant of the people willing to talk to us, we could only find one Harris supporter in every restaurant. And we left no stone unturned. I approached every single person.
She's talking about in Reno, Nevada. They couldn't find, they're at these restaurants, they can't find but one Harris supporter. So I don't know what that tells you about Nevada. It's a swing state. It's pretty important. Where do you find the state of this race right now?
Well, number one, you don't look under stones to get somebody to interview. So I think that's probably holding her back. And number two, the support for Kamala Harris, and this is based on my analysis of the polling, very thin. You don't see people jump up and down unless they are rank ideologue progressives. Those people firmly in her corner, the George Clooney's of the world, they love her because she is one of them. But the regular folks paying so much more for the essentials of life, they're not convinced that this is the answer. So that Trump has an opportunity, if he just corrects the course a little bit, stops making the unforced errors, he's close enough that he could win 7 weeks from today. But whether Donald Trump can do that, because it applies discipline, I don't know.
Yeah, that's the problem. You know, we've been talking about that for a while. I still feel that these underlying currents related to the economy, and there is this lack of trust. I've even seen this with African Americans in particular on Kamala Harris. How that manifests itself at the polls, I don't know. But I think that even a small amount of increased African-American support, maybe in a state like Wisconsin or certainly Pennsylvania, that could make a difference in a real tight election, for sure.
Well, that's my lead story on the No Spin News tonight on BillO'Reilly.com, voting blocks. So right now, as it stands, 24% of African-Americans say they're going to vote for Trump. That's a big number for the Republicans. If they can hold that number... And in the Hispanic American community, 51% are supporting Trump. If that holds, Trump wins. So all of this, you know, polling and all of that, it's because of the vagaries of this chaotic campaign, it can change very quickly. You know, when I wrote Confronting the Presidents, I wrote it, it's a profile of all 45 men, what they did well, what they did poorly. And then you as the reader can decide whether they helped or hurt the country. It's up to you. I don't rank them. But one of the things that I zeroed in on was how they won. And the Kamala Harris campaign is using the same techniques that the immortal Warren Harding used in 1920. Now, if you go out in the streets of St. Louis after your show today, Mark, and you go, hey, Warren Harding, what do you think of him? They're like, he's a rapper, right? I like Warren. He's a rapper. Nobody knows him, okay? But he never gave an interview. He didn't even campaign. Harris was campaigning. He sat in there in his porch in Marion, Ohio, waved to people, and he was elected in a landslide. But nobody knew who they were voting for. And he was one of the worst. All the guy did was stay up late playing cards with his corrupt cronies, get drunk, and chase his mistress around the White House for 3 years. That's all he did. I mean, if you vote for somebody and you don't know who that person really is, even though her values haven't changed,
yes,
well, what are those
right.
values?
Yeah, that's a great question.
So anyway, it's a crazy race. It's one of the most lunatic races we've ever had in our entire history.
Well, let's segue into a little bit more of a conversation about confronting the presidents, because I don't know how you crunch all of these presidents into one book. But one of the things I love about your books when we have conversations, Bill, is these real interesting nuggets that kind of emerge that maybe you weren't even familiar with when you went in to write this with Martin. You got any favorites here from this book?
Well, we got every page. You've got stuff you didn't know. George Washington's mother didn't like him. She wrote letters to the local Virginia newspaper saying that my son Georgie is starving me to death. And drove General Washington nuts. He's in the middle of the Revolutionary War, and his mother's hammering him to the press. He didn't even go to his mom's funeral. So stuff like that, every president. William Howard Taft got stuck in the bathtub because he was so enormous. And the White House valet had to pull him out of the tub or he's going to drown.
That's a good one.
John Quincy Adams every morning got up, walked out to the Potomac River, took off all his clothes and swam naked in the river.
Not a bad way to start the day.
Yeah, you're not taught that in school. And then one time the river suddenly rose because of a current and the president's clothes were heading down toward Portugal. He had no clothes. So we had that stuff because we want to humanize all 45 of these men. So, you know, something about who they really were.
Yeah. Is there one, because like with a guy like Clinton, I can't even imagine the amount of material, especially because it was in more of the modern era.
Sure. I mean, we always had to pare it down to the essentials of what they actually believed, how they governed, and how they conducted themselves. And Clinton was a fairly good technician, political technician. He understood the government and how it runs, whereas Jimmy Carter had no blanking clue. I mean, he was just way in over his head. And he came from Georgia, and Bill Clinton came from Arkansas, same governor situation. But Clinton walked in, and he sized it up pretty fast. He did an okay job if you overlook the foibles. So that's what we bring to each chapter. But the relevance to today is that all of these men were flawed. So, you know, a lot of people, Donald Trump, I could never vote for him. Well, check out Lyndon Johnson. Lyndon Johnson makes Donald Trump look like St. Francis of Assisi. It's just crazy how corrupt that guy was. And we, as I have in all my killing books, we bring it right to you. There's no BS. That's why I say no spin assessments. We don't cut. We just cut through. Here's how we know what happened. You'll know how we know. And it's detective work. That's the beauty of these books, is where Dugard and I are like detectives. We ferret out this stuff. And you're right. I didn't know a lot of it before I started writing it.
Bill O'Reilly, always great to have you on. We'll see where the next 7 weeks take us. The new book, Confronting the Presidents, No Spin Assessments, from Washington to Biden. You can also find him at BillO'Reilly.com. Awesome to catch up, Bill. Thank you so much. Have a great week.
Appreciate it, Mark. Thanks for having me back.
That is Mr. Bill O'Reilly. And as I, you know, maybe I should say this to him, because I'd be comfortable saying this to him as well. But I mentioned this before the top of the hour. Sometimes I get, and I can relate with this probably better than most people out there listening. Sometimes you get crabby, yeah. Bill. Sometimes you get, you know, Bill's in a good mood. Bill is in a good mood today.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, I can say
he
that.
He was happy,
so,
Bill.
He was good today. One thing that I wanted to get to before we break, we have Mayor Sean Flower of Eureka, but we're going to talk about home building with him. But there's some really, I would say, pretty disturbing stuff that's come out about the Secret Service, according to this whistleblower that Senator Hawley has been working with. And you're talking about allegations that the person that who was on site in Pennsylvania on that ill-fated day was a newbie, didn't really have a good reputation, all this stuff that people are saying. Here's Senator Hawley.
We've had multiple whistleblowers from within the Secret Service tell us that what happened at Butler should never have happened. The Secret Service was not prepared. They did not follow their own protocols. And I have to say, looking at what happened over the weekend, I have the same set of questions. Why wasn't the perimeter of that golf course swept? Why did agents not find a guy who was there for 12 hours before he started pointing a rifle at the former president of the United States? I mean, clearly, we've got some issues here with the Secret Service, and I think it begins at the top.
You know, a lot of people, I'm not sure where to come in on this point about what happened over the weekend, because Senator Hawley's going to address this off-record thing. You heard the director of the Secret Service yesterday talk about how the trip to the golf course was
unscripted.
Not on the schedule.
Yes.
So I don't know how you exactly plan for that or how they're supposed to plan for that. He doesn't think that that's a good excuse.
Well, yeah, well, what he means to say is zero. But the answer there is zero times. They didn't do a protective sweep. And when he says that it was off the record, it just means it wasn't publicly available. Listen, I mean, Donald Trump plays golf frequently. He has been to this course frequently. It adjoins his residence. It's not as if they parachuted him in somewhere where they'd never been before. Clearly, the shooter, the would-be assassin, thought he might well be there. And he was able to camp out for 12 hours and have nobody come up to him. This is a lot like Crooks, the other assassin back in Butler, who was able to get on that roof, able to take a line of sight and ultimately take shots, and nobody did anything until he started shooting the president. I mean, really, this is totally unacceptable.
Okay, well, I don't think it's the same.
I don't disagree with
Senator Hawley. Now, maybe there's still some failures here. I'm not going to, you know, deny that. But listen to some of the report's findings. The lead agent, I sort of alluded to this, the lead agent responsible for the Butler visit, including the rally, failed a key examination during their federal law enforcement training. Keep in mind, this is a whistleblower accusation.
Certainly.
Okay, so something that's important to say here. He was known to be a low-caliber agent. Well, is that true or not? Or is that just someone with an axe to grind? You know, you could have personality conflicts, et cetera.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not familiar with personality conflicts, but I've heard that that happens sometimes in the workplace. Secret Service intelligence units, teams of Secret Service agents paired with the state and local law enforcement to handle reports of suspicious persons, but they were absent from the Butler rally. Deployment of those units would have mitigated poor communication between the law enforcement components. I think that's probably true. The hospital site where former President Trump received treatment was poorly secured. The Secret Service site agent responsible for the hospital didn't know what was going on, couldn't answer basic questions about site security. So this is all in this whistleblower report. And this was, by the way, this was all done before what happened on Sunday in Florida. So I would say there's probably, you know, lessons to learn here. One of the quotes from the report is one whistleblower alleged, because I think they have several, that the Secret Service's lead site agent, this goes back to the guy with little experience. The agent with specific responsibility for the security of the rally site was known to lack competence and experience in the role. The whistleblower claimed that this agent was responsible for mitigating line-of-sight concerns at the Butler site. Another whistleblower told Hawley's office that the lead agent personally made decisions that likely compromised the overall security of the event. I think the bottom line here is this shouldn't be in a whistleblower account. This should be testimony.
Totally
agree. Recorded testimony.
Yes.
The former Secret Service director should have to testify. Again, there's still so many questions about this that simply have not been answered in the least bit. And we seem to be, this is one of the things I think I would cite as a problem, we seem to be finding more information out from Josh Hawley and a whistleblower than from the Justice Department or the Secret Service. I don't think there's any denying that. Mayor Flower of Eureka, but he's a home builder. We're going to talk about some things related to that, plus an audio cut of the day coming up.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age, wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I. com.
Here's a guy I need to play golf with, Sean Flower, down in Eureka at the Legends. That is definitely on the list of things to do. Mayor Flower, how are you this afternoon?
Doing real good, Mark.
You are also a home builder. That is the circumstance that you are welcomed into the show today because you're the president of Flower & Fendler Homes. You used to be the past president of the St. Louis Home Builders Association. And here's why I thought of you, Sean. I'm hearing Kamala Harris. I'm watching football, and I see all these Kamala Harris ads, how she's going to change the country. She's going to build a million homes. I think she's going to do that with a magic wand. Maybe you can confirm to me. But these allegations, even on the Republican side, you know, there's a lot of talk about home building. I want to know what the realities are of where home building is right now and some of the struggles that your industry continues to be in.
Well, the biggest problem they have is everybody looks at it in a real short-term window. And if you really look at it, you say we stopped building houses in the 2008 crisis, or we stopped putting lots on the ground, and we basically burned through all the lots that were on the ground between about 2008 and about 2015. And we started ramping up after that. But that's the problem is we've been chronically behind because we stopped for a big period of time. So it's become a big issue. And now when the pandemic ramped up and we had more demand and we're continuing to have more houses formed, we just have a huge imbalance where we have way more people that want to buy a house than we have houses that are out there. And it's driving prices up. And the whole time we're doing that, both every state, local and federal policy effectively is fairly anti-building because it's just the regulatory environment gets worse every year. It's hard to build. It gets harder every year to put a house on the ground if you wanted to.
Can you put that into perspective? Because I talk about, you know, regulation all the time and the federal bureaucracy and red tape and how it costs businesses. One of the examples that I use, I just mentioned, and occasionally I'll mention my friend Rick Niner, who's out in Las Vegas. He works in the industrial gas industry. It's kind of boring. It's nitrogen and oxygen to industry, but also to hospitals. And when we were talking, you know, 4 years ago about, remember, Sean, there were stories about we don't have enough oxygen, right? Well, that wasn't the case at all. We had plenty of oxygen. We had liquid oxygen that couldn't be easily converted, you know, with the infrastructure that they had. And one of the reasons that a lot of the hospitals in California, now, mind you, this is completely different in Missouri, that they couldn't update some of their technology is because of the bureaucracy. And it would take, you know, from the permitting on down, it would take like 2 years to actually get something done. Now, that I would hope is not that bad here, but you have counties, depending on what county, if you're in St. Louis County, I'm guessing it's more cumbersome, right?
Yeah, it depends. I mean, if you're in a state or local area, sometimes St. Louis is very cut up in their, like, say, zoning. But, you know, generally speaking, everybody will say, oh, we want housing. But when your project actually comes in to be zoned or you're trying to get a larger piece of ground cut up into smaller pieces, you tend to have a lot of opposition. But the best example I can give is the federal government gets involved in a lot of of different local subdivisions. So if you have any type of like creek or running water on your property,
yeah,
you could end up doing, I mean, I've actually in the last 2 years been on three projects where I've been in the woods at night with two tennis nets up trying to catch this white-nosed bat because that could potentially be in the area. And so you spend, I mean, I've literally got, you know, you look at it, you know, you got $20,000, $30,000 trying to catch bats on a project in Fenton in between four subdivisions.
Wow.
You know what I mean? It's an infill project.
Yeah.
And it takes months. I mean, you're hiring specialists. So there's, I could go on and on and on with the different costs, but you start adding that up in that subdivision, a 25-lot subdivision. If I have, you know, $25,000 and trying to catch bats, that's $1,000 a customer that just were on the price.
That's a good
And everybody takes a cut like that. So I could give you a bunch, but there are all sorts of those costs, and neither of the policies, particularly when they start talking about throwing $25,000 at it, it'll be like that car thing where they said they're going to give you a $7,000 credit and every electric car went up $7,000
right.
after they passed the bill. I mean, it does nothing. It just spices demand even more. You need to get, if you don't hear a policy that pushes increased supply and lowering regulation, you're just, it's not going to happen. And you'll just continue to see prices get harder for young people to afford.
So Sue, where I live, I always describe it like right over by 141 and 44, there's a Drury Inn, there's a Sugar Fire right there. And then, way up above there on those cliffs, what was the damn water slide that used to be there?
Wet Willie's,
right. Yeah. So is it on that side, Sean, is it on that side of 141 where Wet Willie's is, where Eilerman and Jane's brothers built all those houses with McBride? Because I drove up there into that subdivision. You could see it from 44. You could see it from 141.
Yeah, it's up on top of that hill up there.
Oh my God, I couldn't believe how many homes were in there.
Really?
I mean, it looks like it's maybe a subdivision that's got 20 homes. There must have been three times that amount. And I guess I bring it up because it's amazing to me, and I know the demand is there, where homes are being squeezed into. And then if you look up on that bluff, Sue, these people, they basically have no yard whatsoever. And if someone, you know, pushed them off their deck, they would fall down to the lane that sits below.
That can't be good.
But, Sean, I mean, that's people want houses, and that's what you're going to have
to
do,
tells
right?
You that tells you the state of what's going on in a lot of situations. You know, especially in St. Louis County, you've gone through a lot of the most desirable properties, so you keep moving down that list. But that does tell you, I mean, people want, how they need them bad, and if they can get them on the ground and go, there's a demand for that type of housing. And in Eureka, we've had over 1,000 homes, I think, built in two large McBride subdivisions out here in the last couple of years, and that's been a huge draw because you can still have some moderate pricing on it. But people are, I mean, they look, you know, I always tell people now, I'm selling new homes to people that don't even want to buy a house, don't want to buy a new home. They'd love to find a resale, but they can't find anything even for sale.
Yep.
And that's the other hidden one is every policy you have right now is inflationary for housing because the rates have gone up. So everybody's in their house at 2.5%. They know if they get a mortgage, they're at 6% right now. So they really don't want to move, which keeps everybody locked in their house. And then the only thing is the new houses and all the cost of our materials, lots, everything are very high. So it's just, that's why I say if you're not addressing those core concerns, you're just not being honest with me.
Yeah.
You.
Sean Flowers here. He's the mayor of Eureka, but also the president of Flower and Fendler Homes. What would you say to a young person? Look, I have kids that are 27 and 24. They're just starting off, you know, basically in life. My son's a teacher. These young kids, they don't think they'll ever be able to buy a home. Sean, what would you say about that?
Well, I mean, I think it's important to at least try and get on that ladder. But it is, if you're looking to try and live in an inner ring area, it's very difficult to find it. But I still encourage people, I mean, if you can get going, and even if you have to a little further out than where you want to be to get started, I really think it's helpful because it does build equity. And it's almost, you know, in a way, it's like you're investing in all the wood, concrete, all those materials that are going up. If you don't do it, I mean, the alternative is just keep saving your money. But it's hard to catch up if you never start.
True.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, it's hard to envision another, not that it won't happen in the future, but something to really go bust just because there's too much demand.
Correct.
Yeah, you will not see another 2008, and again, or not for, not never, but you won't see it for a long time because literally I spent years, we didn't develop a single lot. I mean, years, and I was at a builder that was doing 300 a year. There's actually a number of two weird ones. But there's actually less carpenter hours being spent on new construction right now than there was in the 90s. And
really?
There's actually, if you took like the 2008 list of top 10 builders, the numbers that we're building now, the only one that would still be in that top 10 is McBride and Eilerman. everybody else's numbers now are so low, they wouldn't even qualify to be in that top 5 to 10 in the 2008 paper, just on the total quantity we're doing.
Wow.
So just not adjusting for inflation, not adjusting for raw numbers. I mean, think about that. Raw numbers, there's less, with all these new families, there's less people, less carpenter hours being spent than there were 15, 20 years ago.
Is part
so
of the,
we're not getting out of it.
Yeah, that's amazing. Is part of the equation, are you, if you had more carpenters and more contractors and more builders?
Yeah, it would help tremendously.
It would.
I walked by a crew today, my brother and dad build houses, and they're on a job trying to get a house started, and today they could have two guys, which is the minimum you could do safely. It should be a four-man crew, maybe a fifth guy is a Cub carpenter out there, and the best they could get out there today was two. And that happens all over the place. You'll see that on a regular basis. We're still dealing with a shortage. And that, again, is another one where I would say to a young person, if you want to buy a house, go into one of these trades, because you're going to make more money than a lawyer at some point, because there are none of you around.
You got to work.
The wages have gone up, and the number of people that are able to do these trades is way down. You could find a job anytime.
Yep.
Boy, I hope
you gotta work hard.
You gotta work hard, but
it's a good lesson. Hey, Sean, thank you so much. This was great. I was hoping to find out some information. You were very helpful, and I appreciate it. It was great to see you in person down in Eureka last week as well when Mark Cox was there. We'll talk soon. Thank you, Sean.
See you later, Mark. Bye.
The Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Audio cut of the day coming up. Sue, you have a traffic note before that?
I do. We've got accident up north. So 270 is jammed in both directions, kind of between the chain of rocks and the canal bridges. And if I look at one of the Illinois cameras, I just see smoke. So just know that if you are east or westbound 270, there is an incident between those bridges causing a delay in both directions.
It's been a little tricky this afternoon, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Let's see. How much time do I have? I better get right into it here because I don't want to cut myself short. And this one might require just a little bit of storytelling, but let's do this here.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Okay, well, this one, we just love Senator Kennedy from Louisiana, and he just kind of nails it again here, so we might as well air this because it's so accurate.
We need answers more than the Secret Service needs money. In the real world, when you don't do your job, you get fired. In the world of Washington, when you don't do your job, you get more money because obviously you need it.
I don't think he's wrong about that, right?
He's not.
Isn't that amazing? And then I started the show a little bit with this today. Adriana Diaz, who's a reporter for CBS, very excited reporter, wanted to go to Nevada, swing state, find out what voters were thinking. So she goes to Reno, Nevada.
Do you always get together and talk politics?
We do.
Yes. So it's our lucky day. Yeah. We found the right table today. What issue is most important to you?
I'm extremely concerned about the border.
Illegals. They got to go.
People are coming here seeking asylum.
Baloney. They're coming here for the freebies.
When people talk about immigration, they're thinking we're saying we don't want immigrants of any kind, and that's not what people are saying. People are saying that there are people who have come here legally. Why do they get pushed aside to allow people who have not even worked one day in our country, have not paid into the system?
I love that.
Yes.
And that was an African-American woman who summed up, I said this earlier, she summed up this whole issue that apparently the legacy media doesn't get. Look, these guys that came in from the BBC that interviewed Jane and I a couple of weeks ago, they were awesome. I love them. But the guy asked me this question on the Sunday afternoon we taped it about why I cared or why Republicans in Missouri care about immigration since it really doesn't affect us. And I said, oh, it affects us. It affects us as Americans. Yeah. We see that there are people that have legally come to this country. By the way, you're going to see, if you go to the baseball game tonight, you're going to see a bunch of them before the game take the oath for becoming an American because they become American citizens.
And it's so touching.
It is touching. But see, people will cheer for that, right? But there's a difference, as that woman just pointed out. Now, my favorite part of the CBS story was when Ms. Diaz, who did the report, went on set and said this. This is amazing when you think about it.
We had so much fun. But what was really incredible is in every single restaurant of the people willing to talk to us, we could only find one Harris supporter in every restaurant. And we left no stone unturned. I approached every single person.
Oh, that's interesting.
They did go to a rural area and they went to Las Vegas. That was in Reno. In Reno, they looked. They looked under stones. They looked for Harris supporters. They couldn't find it. That's interesting in a swing state where it shows that the race is neck and neck. Sue, have a great night.
You too, Mark.
We'll talk tomorrow at 3 o'clock with a temporary studio again, I think. Hang in there.
Get more at 971talk.com.
The Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Audio cut of the day coming up. Sue, you have a traffic note before that?
I do. We've got an accident up north. So 270 is jammed in both directions, kind of between the chain of rocks and the canal bridges. And if I look at one of the Illinois cameras, I just see smoke. So just know that if you are east or westbound 270, there is an incident between those bridges causing a delay in both directions.
It's been a little tricky this afternoon, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Let's see. How much time do I have? I better get right into it here because I don't want to cut myself short. And this one might require just a little bit of storytelling, but let's do this here.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Okay, well, this one, we just love Senator Kennedy from Louisiana, and he just kind of nails it again here, so we might as well air this because it's so accurate.
We need answers more than the Secret Service needs money. In the real world, when you don't do your job, you get fired. In the world of Washington, when you don't do your job, you get more money because obviously you need it.
I don't think he's wrong about that,
no,
right?
He's not.
Isn't that amazing? And then I started the show a little bit with this today. Adriana Diaz, who's a reporter for CBS, very excited reporter, wanted to go to Nevada, swing state, find out what voters were thinking. So she goes to Reno, Nevada.
Do you always get together and talk politics?
We do.
Yes. So it's our lucky day. Yeah. We found the right table today. What issue is most important to you?
I'm extremely concerned about the border.
Illegals. They got to go.
People are coming here seeking asylum.
Baloney. They're coming here for the freebies.
When people talk about immigration, they're thinking we're saying we don't want immigrants of any kind, and that's not what people are saying. People are saying that there are people who have come here legally. Why do they get pushed aside to allow people who have not even worked one day in our country, have not paid into the system?
I love that.
Yes.
And that was an African-American woman who summed up, I said this earlier, she summed up this whole issue that apparently the legacy media doesn't get. Look, these guys that came in from the BBC that interviewed Jane and I a couple of weeks ago, they were awesome. I love them. But the guy asked me this question on the Sunday afternoon we taped it about why I cared or why Republicans in Missouri care about immigration since it really doesn't affect us. And I said, oh, it affects us. It affects us as Americans. Yeah. We see that there are people that have legally come to this country. By the way, you're going to see, if you go to the baseball game tonight, you're going to see a bunch of them before the game take the oath for becoming an American because they become American citizens.
And it's so touching.
It is touching. But see, people will cheer for that, right? But there's a difference, as that woman just pointed out. Now, my favorite part of the CBS story was when Ms. Diaz, who did the report, went on set and said this. This is amazing when you think about it.
We had so much fun. But what was really incredible is in every single restaurant of the people willing to talk to us, we could only find one Harris supporter in every restaurant. And we left no stone unturned. I approached every single person.
Oh, that's interesting.
They did go to a rural area and they went to Las Vegas. That was in Reno. In Reno, they looked. They looked under stones. They looked for Harris supporters. They couldn't find it. That's interesting in a swing state where it shows that the race is neck and neck. Sue, have a great night.
You too, Mark.
We'll talk tomorrow at 3 o'clock with a temporary studio again, I think. Hang in there.
Get more at 971talk.com.